And get your Bibles and go to 1 Samuel chapter 17. And we are going to be looking at perhaps a story that you know everything about already. You know the details about it already. How many times have you heard the story of David and Goliath? Could you figure out how many times you've heard the story? How many times have you read the story of David and Goliath? Some of you have taught a class about David and Goliath. Isn't it interesting that this is one of those stories that even the world has some knowledge of? Have you ever watched a football game? Basketball or baseball? Have you ever watched a sports game on TV and the commentators make some reference to David and Goliath? As if everybody listening to them knows about David and Goliath. It's one of those stories like Jonah. It's one of those stories like Noah and the flood that, you know, people have heard about. They may not know all of the details, but they've heard about it. So what can we possibly talk about tonight that you haven't heard all of this before? What can we possibly do? This is a long chapter. What can we possibly do with these 50 plus verses for those of us who maybe we've only studied it two or three times? Some of you have probably heard the story of David and Goliath. I wouldn't be surprised over 100 times. Bobo, you're shaking your head yes. You've heard it over 100 times?
Sure.
Really? At least more than two. So somewhere between two and over 100.
Right.
That's about very nice.
It's just an estimate.
I'm glad. I appreciate the ballpark figure that you're giving to us. So here's 1 Samuel chapter 17. The focus of the classes during the VBS, we're going to try to carry them here in the auditorium. And the focus of this class is about courage. There's a lot we can learn from David about courage. But before we get to talk about David, David's not even mentioned until you get about a third of the way through the chapter. Before we get to talk about David, I want to talk about this champion. Before we talk about courage, let's talk about the champion. Who is the champion who's introduced in 1 Samuel 17? Goliath is his name. What do we know about this champion? Well, look at the circumstances. Look in the very first couple verses. Look at the circumstances. Who is at war? You got the Philistines on one side, and you got the Israelites on the other side. Look at those first two verses. The Philistines gathered their armies together to go to battle. Now you think about wars back then. Are they a little bit different than they are today? Oh, just slightly. They gathered their forces, and it says that in verse 3 that the Philistines stood on a mountain on one side to do battle. Verse 2 says that Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they drew up in battle array against the Philistines. And verse 3 says that Israel stood on a mountain on the other side. You got the picture? Here they are to come to do battle. They're on either side, two different mountains, and here's a valley in between. Think about battles in the old days. What were the soldiers in the Revolutionary War? Civil War. When were they told to shoot? When you can see the white of their eyes. Are we waiting that long today? Not quite. You go back to this day. Before there was a rifle, before there was buckshot, before there was any way, well, wait until you see the white of their eyes. Think about the battles that they encountered on that occasion. They're on two different mountains. You see these circumstances, but look at this champ who's described in verse 4. It's almost, y'all ever watched a boxing match? And the ringleader, he announces all of the details about in this corner, weighing in at and pounds and this, and he's done this, and you know, or the guy who he announces coming in, he says all of this stuff that he's done and all that he's accomplished. It's almost like that. You know, here's the champion. That's what he's called in verse 4. How many battles had he won? Well, we don't know. Was he undefeated? Well, he's still alive. That's a pretty good clue that this guy's undefeated. That makes you a champion in those days. If you still got your head, you're a champion. So here's the champion. He went out from the camp of the Philistines. He's named Goliath. He's from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. How tall is that? How long is a cubit? About 18 inches. A measurement from the tip of your finger to your elbow. Is everybody's measurement the same? If you're going to measure, when God told Noah to build an ark 300 cubits long, was he wishing he had a grandchild, you know, like 3 years old? Hey, come here, let me use your arm. We're going to use your cubit because it'll get done quicker. You know, what's a cubit? Well, standard man's arm length, forearm from the tip of his finger to his elbow. Sometimes that was averaged about 18 inches. Sometimes it was longer. It could be up to 21 inches. So here's Goliath, 6 cubits. If we go with 18 inches, what does that get you? That gets you 9 feet. And then a span. What's a span? Thumb to pinky. You spread your fingers, and that's a span. You figure Goliath's hand was bigger than mine? Maybe. Maybe he had small hands. So here's a guy that at his very shortest, he's 9'6 or 9'9. 9 inches across. 9'6 or 9'9. If you figure a cubit could be up to 21 inches, here's a guy that's somewhere between 9.5 feet tall and maybe as tall as 11 feet. How tall is a basketball rim, Johnny? 10 feet. Yeah, he's as tall as a basketball rim. That'd be interesting, right? I mean, that gives a whole new definition to David and Goliath on the NBA court, right? I mean, goaltending, he is the goal. I mean, goaltending, he can't raise his hands without the whistle being blown. So here's Goliath, 6 cubits and a span. Would that be intimidating? Would you be intimidated? Who's the tallest person you have ever met? How tall was the tallest person you've ever met? Wilt, did you meet Wilt Chamberlain, Jerry? Did you really? How tall was Wilt Chamberlain? 7'2"? That's what I was thinking. 7'2"? That's gigantic. Have you ever met somebody who was 6'4 and 6'6 and you thought they were over 7 feet tall? I mean, you're just looking up at them like, man, you're huge. You know, and I'm 6'6. And you think, you sure? You know, have you been measured late? You got to be 7 feet. You walk up to a 7-footer. That's huge. Here's a guy, 9.5 feet. I know you all know all of this, but I want us to get the picture. So here's a man who has a bronze helmet on his head. He's armed with a coat of mail. I want you to think about this man and think about these S words. He has the skill of a champion. When you get over to verse 33, he says himself that he was a man of war from his youth. Now, that's not man of war that we think of out on the beach. Here's a man of war, he says, from his youth. He had been trained. He had been skilled from a child to go to war. He's got the skill of a champion. He's got the size of a champion. Could be as tall as 11 feet, 9.5 to 11 feet tall. He's got the shirt. You got to have an S word. He's got the coat of mail that he's wearing. In our terminology, is 125 pounds. Now, I don't want to ask for any volunteers to raise their hand that they weigh 125 pounds. And I don't want to encourage any of you to be tempted to lie, to say you only weigh 125 pounds. But I want you to imagine carrying a 125-pound person on your shoulders to go out to battle. He's got 120. And to him, what is that? No biggie. I mean, how much does this guy weigh? Was it Manute Bol? Was that the name of the NBA player who was 7 feet something tall, but he was a toothpick in size? I mean, that's not Goliath. Shaquille O'Neal. He's got the height and he's got the width. All right? Here's Goliath. He's got the height. He's got the width. He's got the spear that's like a weaver's beam. And the tip of it, 15 or 16 pounds. The tip of it. I like to think about a gallon of water weighs 8 pounds. You take 2 gallons of water. If you took 2 gallons of water and held them out like this, how long would you be holding them? How long are you going to hold that? He's got a spear. And on the end of his spear are 2 gallons of water. You know what your spear would be doing? You know, you're the spearhead. No, you're supposed to shoot. You're not supposed to shoot the ground. Your spear, you're supposed to throw it that way. No, I can't even pick the thing up. He's got 16 pounds on the end of that spear. If somebody could lift that, would you be intimidated? You see that? You see him lift that? Here's a guy that is intimidating. He's got the sword of a champion. We're not told about the size of his sword, but if you see how big his spear is, how big do you think his sword was? When you picture David picking up his sword, what do you picture? Two hands. You ever seen, what's that movie called? You pull the sword out. What's that called? Sword in the Stone, that's it. Have you pictured, you know, somebody walking, David trying to pull this sword, pick this sword, maybe a sword that's as big as he is, and he's going to wield this sword and he's going to pick it up? Well, no wonder it chopped his head off. The thing just had to fall down out of his hands, and he's got the sword of a champion. So you look at this champion, you look at how he's described in Scripture, and he comes out, verse 8. And he issues this challenge. He stood and he cried out to the armies of Israel and he said to them, here's a good question. Why have you come out to line up for battle? I say that's a good question because why were they doing it? Seriously, why were they coming out to do battle? Why do you come out? Why do you line up to do battle? He says, am I not a Philistine? You, the servants of Saul, we are enemies. So he says to them, choose a man. Pick somebody. Choose a man for yourselves. Let him come down to me. What's the first word you have in verse 9? Seriously, come on. If. Can you hear him snickering? If he is able. Now, come on, let's be real about this. If he is able to fight, first of all. There's a coordinating conjunction here. First, he's got to be able to fight, and he's got to be able to kill me. Now, give me a break. If he's able to do that, okay, we'll be your servants. But if I prevail, and kill him, then you shall be our servants, and you shall serve us. The Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. I defy you. What does verse 16 say? How often did he do this? He did this twice a day, morning and evening, for 40 days. It's a good question to ask, why are you lining up for battle? We've done this for 40 days. We've done this for over a month. And he says the same thing. Why do you line up to battle today? I'm a Philistine. You're the servants of Saul. All right, choose a man. Send him out here. If he's able to fight and kill me, yeah, we'll be your servants. If I prevail, we'll be your servants. I defy the armies of Israel this day. Choose you a man. 80 times he had said that. And what did Israel do about it? Nothing. Nothing. He issued the challenge 80 times and nothing. He's the champ, all right. Nobody would fight him. What about the cowards? Do you have any cowards in this passage? You got lots of cowards. You got cowards by the dozens. Isn't it interesting that the cowards are the men of war? The cowards are the men of war. It was Saul and the men of war who were out there on the battlefield. It wasn't the whole nation. It was Saul, the king, and the men of war. And when David gets there, who are the cowards? They're the men of war. That doesn't make sense. They're the guys who have been trained to go to battle. They're the guys who have come out to do battle, and yet they're lining up for no apparent reason. Notice some things about them. Look in verse 11. I want us to see that these cowards, they were cognizant of everything that was happening. They were cognizant of everything this Philistine said. It wasn't that they didn't have a translator. I mean, what language was he speaking? Filistino? I mean, what's he speaking? Is he speaking Hebrew? Scripture doesn't tell us what language he's speaking. Was he speaking a language that they understood? Yeah. It's not a translation problem. They are well aware. Verse 11 says, when Saul and all Israel heard these words. How many times did they hear it? I mean, you could set your watch by this guy. Yep, it's morning time. There's Goliath again. You're in a camp with men of war, and twice a day, this guy comes and challenges you. And the first day passes, second day passes, third day passes. What are you thinking on day 22? Y'all want to play cards? Y'all got any new games to teach me? You know, this is getting kind of boring out here. Amazing. Look at verse 25. We're going to skip around a little bit here. When David got to the camp, in verse 25, the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who has come up? David just got there. They're asking him, hey, we got to tell you, have you seen this guy who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. They know about Goliath, the guys who were there, the men of war. They have heard everything he has said, and they understand what he's doing. They understand that by his challenge, every time he comes out, they are offering to David. You know what he's doing? He is defying Israel. Okay? And we're not doing anything? He's defying Israel, and we're just all sitting here? You're going to tell me about this guy, and yet no one is stepping up. And so what do they say? Surely, in verse 25, he has come up to defy Israel. And it shall be, they tell David, it shall be that the man who kills him, the king, Saul, will enrich with great riches. And he will give him his daughter. Maybe they didn't do it because the daughter was ugly. And they said, oh, I don't want that. He's going to enrich him with great riches. He will give him his daughter. Must have been a prize. He will give his father's house exemption from tax. Man, if I can get the IRS off my back, I'll go out and do that. Here's the prize, the reward that had been offered. They heard the challenge. They recognized the implications of the challenge. They understood that he was defying Israel, and they understood there's a reward out. They knew exactly what the reward was. It was sitting there for whoever would step up to kill him. So it's not that these guys are, you know, they're just out on a camping trip and they don't know what's going on and they're just waiting. They're waiting for King Saul to lead them into battle. It's not that they're waiting. They know exactly what's going on. And yet, what do? Now, they are men of war. And so they are fighters. They are combatants. Look in verse 2. It's interesting. The end of verse 2 says that they drew up in battle array against the Philistines. They drew up in battle array against the Philistines. Look in verse 19. David gets on the scene. David arrives there, and in verse 19, Saul and they, that's talking about David's brothers, Saul and they and all the men of Israel, they were in the valley of Elah. What were they doing there? Really? They're fighting with the Philistines. Wait a minute. I didn't think they were doing anything. Well, what? David gets there. What are you guys doing? Oh, we're fighting the Philistines. Really? Yeah, we're in war. We're in battle. Well, what's going on? Well, he comes out here twice a day. He says these words. He's defying us. There's a reward if anybody will go out and kill him. But, you know, otherwise, really? I mean, they're claiming. They're using it. Well, we're fighting them. Look in verse 20. David arose early in the morning, left the sheep with a keeper, took the things and went as Jesse commanded. And we'll come back to that verse in a minute. And he came to the camp. He came to the camp at the point in the day when the army was going out to the fight and shouting for the battle. Now, I realize that we could say that maybe there were skirmishes that were going on between pieces and parts of the various armies. That could be happening. But what's it going to matter if we don't kill the champion? But David gets there at the time of day. We're going to battle. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's exactly what they're doing. We're going. Yeah, we're going to go. We're going to go fight. We're going to fight. Okay, we're going to stand here. Okay, who's going? Come on, get out there. Who's going to go? They got all the motivation. They got all, we're excited, you know, we get our rally speech in the morning. Okay, this is the day. Oh, this is day 23. All right, let's go back. You know, anybody want some lunch? You know, hello, we're fighting men. We're dressed in battle array. We're ready to go. They're combatants, but they're not a whole lot about combat. Look at verse 21. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army. Yeah, they were drawn up. They were dressed up. They were dressed up and doing nothing. Why? Because they're chicken. They're a bunch of cowards. They know exactly what's going on, cognizant of everything that's happening. They are combatants. They are the men of war. They're claiming to be, you know, great in this area, but they are chicken. Look, go back to verse 11. When Saul and all Israel heard these words, the defying words of Goliath, they were dismayed. Anybody have a different word? They were dismayed and greatly afraid. Anybody got anything different there? They were terrified. Wouldn't you be? You just heard these words, and they are terrified, they are dismayed, they are greatly afraid. Look down in verse 24. Remember, David arrived. David got there in verse 20. He got there as the army was going out. In verse 24, it says, all of the men of Israel, when they saw the man. Now, wait a minute. Verse 16 says that the Philistine drew near, presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. And then David arrives. So do the math. What day is this? 40 plus the next day. This is the 41st day. The 41st day, they see the giant. This is the 81st time that he has come out. The 81st time that he has spoken these same words. And what do they do in verse 24? When they saw him, they fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. They have seen this guy. They have heard this guy 81 times. And he is just as scary as he was the first time. These guys are cowards. They're chicken. You know, would you think that at some point you would stop being afraid of him? I mean, I don't know. I mean, he is terrifying, but, well, if we're not going to do anything, you know, let him come out, let him do his thing, let him go back. We'll see you tonight. All right, goodbye. But even on the 81st time, they were still afraid of him. Even on the 81st time, they ran away. That's not the picture that we have of the army of God, is it? You know, you think about the army of God. This is after the days that Gideon took 300 men up against who? Remember the Midianites? And how they killed in one night 185,000? How many Israelites were there? 300. Were there any fraidy cats among those 300? Nope. They'd already gone home. Is there anybody among those 300 who didn't know how to drink water? Nope. They had already been dismissed. So you got the right drinkers of water and you got the brave men, 300 of them. Do you think anybody in the army of Israel knew that story? Why are they terrified of this guy? Do you not think they know those stories about Joshua driving out the inhabitants of Israel? It's amazing. Yeah, here's a man. Maybe the biggest man they had ever seen in their life. I don't know. For some of them. Maybe the biggest man they'd ever seen in their life. And they're terrified. We've seen the champion. We've seen the cowards. Here's where we want to spend all the rest, oh man, 15 minutes. Here's where we want to spend all the rest of our time tonight. Let's talk about this courageous guy. Let's talk about David. And irony doesn't start with a C, so we have to go with the next best thing, the contrast. Look at the contrast. Look at the irony that God uses when he brings David on the scene. Look in verse 12. David, the son of Jesse. How many sons, verse 12, how many sons did Jesse have? Eight sons. How many brothers did David have? Seven. That was a trick question. See if you'd say eight again. All right, so there are eight sons. David has seven brothers. Jesse was old in the days of Saul. Now you get to verse 14. How did David rank among these brothers? He's the baby. He's the baby in the family. Babies in the family are loved by everybody, right? Babies in the family are esteemed by the entire family, and everybody thinks they're the greatest. Should be. Yeah. I don't think so. Here's the baby in the family. He's the youngest of the brothers. Without even knowing the rest of the story, how do you think his older brothers looked at him? Little brat. I mean, you know, look at this kid. Look at this. He's always doing the right thing. You know, he just drives me nuts. You know, he's always doing what Dad says. You just get away from, you know. Here's, you know, older brothers. Did anybody have seven older brothers? Anybody in here have seven? Who had an older brother? Who had an older brother? Can you imagine having seven of them? Oh, Lord, help us if we have seven older brothers. Here's David. Here's the irony. He's the youngest of the brothers. Three of his older brothers, verse 13, where are the three oldest boys? They're out there. They're out there in the battle. What was David? Verse 15, Now in verse 20, David's a shepherd boy. In contrast, was he a man of war? Were his brothers, his three older brothers, are they men of war? Mm-hmm. What's he? Oh, you keep sheep. Isn't that nice? You little boy, you keep sheep. And in fact, when Eliab talks to him, I don't know if this is an insult down in verse 28, where in verse 28 he says to David, "Why did you come here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness?" I don't know if the word "few" is intended to be an insult or not, but you look at it, oh, where'd you leave those few sheep that you're supposed to be watching, you little shepherd boy? What are you doing here? You can hear almost some of the spite that must have been in the voice. And yet, when David went out to battle, what a contrast. What did he take with him? A sling. 5 stones. He only needed one. And where was his sword? Didn't have a sword. So we are reading about Goliath intimidating God's people. They're all fearful of him. And now we have a boy, the youngest boy in his family, the baby in the family, and the baby who's not even old enough to go to war. He's still at home taking care of dad's few sheep, you know, because that's all he's responsible enough to do, maybe. And now he's going to go out to fight this giant. And what's he going to take? What does this indicate to us about this battle? If David is victorious, if, that's like Goliath saying, if, you know, somebody comes up. If David is victorious, what's it going to prove? There's only one reason this boy is going to be victorious, and it's going to be because of God. How could the Israelites be victorious over the Midianites? Remember, wait a minute. You want to see irony again? You want to see contrast again? 300 versus 185,000. 185,000 had swords. The 300, do you remember the great weapons that they took to battle in Judges chapter 7? What did they have? A pitcher. Everybody needs a pitcher when they go to battle, right? You know, in case you get thirsty. You got a pitcher, got a torch, because you don't want fraidy cats, afraid of the dark. You know, you got to take a light with you, and a horn. Mm-hmm. So we're going to send 300 guys against more than 185,000, and they're going to have a pitcher, a torch, and a horn. What's it going to prove if they're victorious? Same thing with David. Here David goes out, and what a contrast we see. And how obvious it is laid out. But I want you to see his character. And we don't have time to develop all of this. But I think it's interesting to look at this boy's character. When he's with his father and with his brothers, his character was the same. Do you know people's character, that it's different depending on who or at least their behavior. Maybe not their character, but at least their behavior. It's different depending on who they're around. In verse 20, it says that David rose early in the morning. He's eager. He's not lazy. In verse 22, when he gets there, he ran to the army. This is an eager guy. When he's with his dad, he is responsible. Before he leaves the sheep, he gets somebody to take care of him. He's responsible. When he gets in verse 22 to his brothers, he left the supplies in the hand of the supply keeper. He didn't just get there like some of your kids would do and boom, just dump everything. Okay, I got it here. You all, somebody figured out. That's what some of your kids would do, right? All right, I got the supplies here. Just throw them on the ground. All right, they'll figure out what, and then run off. No, responsible. Got somebody to take care of those. Now eager, I'm going to run to the battle. And then here's a young boy who's respectful. He was respectful of his father. He went as Jesse commanded him. And even with his brothers, at the end of verse 22, he greeted his brothers. Do you think he knew what their response was going to be to his presence? I mean, unless the guy's like some of your younger brothers who were just clueless, you know, and do you think he knew that big brothers aren't going to be so keen on seeing me here? But here was a boy that had a godly character. But I want you to see him get all riled up. Look in verse 23. Then as he talked with his brothers, there was the champion, The champion came out, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words. How many times had his brothers heard it? 80 times up to this point. They had heard it 80 times. To them, it's old hat. To them, they might be mouthing it along with, you know. Yeah, same thing. Okay. You know, you can almost, in their minds, it's just routine. All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Same thing. How many times had David heard this? To the best of our knowledge, first time. He hears the same words that had become routine for them. And so he begins talking to the people who are there. And remember in verse 25, where they told him what the king's reward was going to be? Look at verse 26. David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel?" Well, didn't they just tell you in verse 25? It's always confused me. They just said in verse 25 what the reward was. Why is he asking in verse 26 what the reward is? Is he greedy? Does he want the reward? No, this is my opinion. But I think what David was doing was asking these guys, "Do you even know what's going on here? Is there a reward?" He wanted to hear, perhaps with his own ears, these guys say, "Oh yeah, there's a reward and here's what it is." And you could almost, if that's what he's doing, is checking to see, are you hearing him? Are you understanding he's defying Israel? Do you understand there's a reward? You know, for you greedy guys, do you understand there is a reward? And he hears this time and again. And their answer to him in verse 27, "So shall it be done for the man who kills him." They confirm, yep, we know what the reward is. We're still not going to do anything. And they confirm to him at the end of verse 26, "Who is this Philistine?" David said, "Who is this Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And they said, "Yep, that's what's happening." He confirmed that they knew what was happening. He confirmed that they knew that there was a reward. He confirmed that they knew the ramifications of what Goliath was saying. And yet, what did he learn? They're not doing anything about it. They're a bunch of cowards. So what does David do? I think in those verses there, he's evaluating the situation. He's a young boy. He's a shepherd boy. He's the baby in the family. Why is he the one who's evaluating the situation? Well, here's the point of tonight's lesson. We got 5 minutes for it. Here's the point about courage. And I know you're going to think this is crazy. Second bell. We get three bells, remember? Okay. I like that three bell thing, by the way. I think we ought to incorporate that more often. And if we like three, we can go to four. So here's 5 minutes. Here are 15, believe it or not, 15 evidences of his courage. And what I want us to do is we quickly have to look at these. Not just evidences of his courage. Here are 15 ways in which godly courage is characterized. And if you and I are going to have godly courage, here's how our courage needs to be characterized. We're going to start in verse 28. You know what his brothers say. Or at least his oldest brother, Eliab, he comes down on him. He says, "Why have you come here?" Verse 28. "What's going on? What you? I know your pride. I know the insolence of your heart. You've come down here, you sorry little kid. You've come down here to see the battle." Did David run away after that? "Man, my own brothers don't want me here. I'll just go home then." Is that what godly courage does? His godly courage overcame the criticism of his brother. Have you ever gotten down because of the criticism of even a brother or sister in Christ? Somebody ever said something to you, and whether you took it the wrong way, the right way, or whatever, has a fellow Christian ever said something to you that just really got to you, and you just wanted to close up shop? You know, if that's the way things are going to be, I think I'll just quit. David has his own brother to come down on him, and David says, "What have I done now?" You ever said that? Are you kidding me? What have I done now? But then the question, is there not a cause? Hello? Is there not a reason? 81 times you've heard this guy say this, and you guys are doing nothing? And so word gets to Saul, and David comes to Saul in verse 32, and he says, you know what? Let no man's heart fail because of this guy. You know what? Everybody's heart in Israel was failing because of Goliath, and David rose to the challenge. Who else was rising to the challenge? Not a single... Was King Saul head and shoulders taller than anybody else? Was King Saul? No, nobody else is rising to the challenge. But godly courage rises to the challenge when no one else will. And so David said, your servant will go, in verse 32, your servant will go and fight with him. And so, what happens in verse 33? Saul says, come on. You kidding me? You're not Abel. You're not Cain either. You're David. You are not able, I'm sorry, to go against this Philistine to fight with him. You're just a kid. Do you have a word? You are, some translations say, you are just, or you are but a youth. Not just you are a youth, but you're just a kid. And he is a man of war from his youth. Did David handle that? Did he say, yeah, you're right. You're right. I guess I'll just go home. Godly courage handles disparaging comments, even from somebody. You think David looked up to Saul? Even from somebody that you look up to. Godly courage overcomes that. Look at what David says to Saul, verses 34 and following, where he talks to him about the lion and the bear. What does godly courage do? Godly courage takes strength from God's providence in the past and says, God has been with me before and God will be with me again. That's what godly courage does. Number five, it's interesting that twice David calls Goliath the uncircumcised Philistine. Why does he do that? Why do you call somebody the uncircumcised Philistine? He's a Philistine, true. Why are we talking about whether the guy has been circumcised or not? He is not one of us. He is not one of God's children. He is not one who has been chosen by God. What did circumcision represent? It represented a relationship. It represented the covenant between that person and God. And David says, this guy is not in a relationship with God. He doesn't have a covenant with God. We do. What's he doing? I think he's pointing out who this Goliath is. He's calling a spade a spade. He's not one of us. He's not a follower of God. We don't need to be intimidated. We don't need to give in. All right, I'm going to give these to you real quick because I know you're hungry for cookies. And that's why Pete sat in the back so he could get out for cookies. Number six, godly courage defends the name and the honor of God. That's what David did. Number seven, godly courage trusts in God's army and not God's armor and not in man's. Saul tried to give David his armor. David said, no, thank you. You know what? We don't need to trust in man's ways. We need to trust in God's ways. Number eight, godly courage delights in the simplicity of God's plan. Is God's plan complicated? A sling and five stones. Godly courage faces and overcomes giant challenges. What did Goliath say and do when David got out there? By the way, Cam said I could keep you till 10 after and it wouldn't hurt his feelings. So he really did. You could ask him. He did say that. Did Goliath challenge him when he came out? Yeah. What are you coming to me? Are you serious? You're just a youth. Same thing King Saul said to him. And so David overcame disrespect from Saul. David overcame ridicule from Goliath, I mean. David overcame persecution. What did Goliath say to David? He said, I'm going to kill you and I'm going to feed you to the birds. He overcame persecution. He overcame the threats. Six more. Godly courage recognizes opposition to God's people is the same thing as opposition to God. If you're going to oppose the way of God, the people of God, the plan of God, you're opposing God Himself. And that's what David says to Goliath. It's interesting that the Israelites said to David, well, he's defying Israel. David understood that when you defy God's people, you are defying the armies, you are defying the living God. Number 11, godly courage rests solely and fully on the authority, the power, and the will of God. When David came before Goliath, he acted in the name of the Lord. He trusted in the Lord. He sought to make known that there is a God. He says, I've come to you so that everybody will know, not just you, so that everybody will know that there is a God. And I couldn't come up with anything better for verse 47 where he says, for the battle is the Lord's. You know what godly courage does? It just says, you know what? Just let God handle it. Let God take care of this. It's interesting that Goliath's words that he said 81 times, as best as I can count it, he refers to himself 7 times in those words. And as best as I can count it, David's short words to him 7 times, he refers to God. He says, it's not about me. For Goliath, it was all about him. For David, had nothing to do with him. Godly courage recognizes has nothing to do with us. It has everything to do with God. Number 12, godly courage fears no evil. It's eager to defend. Number 13, godly courage, it's obvious when you see it. You know it when you see it. And you know it when it's not there. It hadn't been there for 40 days. Godly courage brings victory with a sling and a stone. And then godly courage is contagious. As we finish, I want you to look at the end of verse 51 and then verse 52. The end of verse 51 says, when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, what'd they do? They fled. You know what? That's the second time we read that word fled. Remember where we read it before? Back in verse 24. When all the men of Israel saw Goliath, what'd they do? They fled. Now, the Philistines see their giant, see their champion dead, and what do? Same thing that they learned, didn't they? They learned how to run. They saw the Israelites do it 80 times. Hey, we can do that. They fled. What did verse 52 say? Now the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines. For the first time in 41 days, they ran the right direction. 80 times they'd run backwards. 80 times they'd retreated. For the first time. Why? Because of God. Because godly courage is motivating when you see it. Godly courage is contagious when you see it. When we think about our responsibility as Christians, you think about courage and our responsibility to be courageous in our service to God. There's a lot that we can learn from a little shepherd boy that we can take, and although it's a story that we've heard somewhere between 2 and 100 times for some of us, for some of us over 100 times, is there not one of these 15 areas where I can say, you know what? I need to concentrate on this and exhibit courage that comes from God more in my life. Y'all have been so attentive, and I really appreciate that and appreciate your participation.